Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Dobrý večer and welcome to the Bohemican Podcast with Pete Coleman and Travis Dow.
Hello and welcome to the Bohemican Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Coleman.
And I'm Travis Dow from the History of Germany podcast.
If you ever had to make a title for somebody to talk about who would be the Henry Ford of, let's say, Czechoslovakia, it would have to be Tomáš Batia and his brother Anton. Together, they were the Henry Ford combined in Czech Republic. And with this grandiose infrastructure plans in place, they became all of that and more. Today, the company has over 5,000 retail stores in 70 countries. But like Henry Ford, Batia would try to found whole cities and control the whole vertical supply chain. The infrastructure project would encompass the whole of the First Republic Czechoslovakia with superhighways, rails, and canals, allowing for better transport and export. But we're not just talking about Czech cars here. No, Tomáš Batia made cars for your feet. This episode is about a shoe company.
And yeah, and I know it might sound not as neat when we're comparing shoes to cars. However, I do believe that we're about to blow your mind. So Batia, the Batia brothers were visionaries. The TNA Batia Shoe Company was founded in 1894 in Zlín in Moravia. And at that point, it was still part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. Okay, so it was like an old Austro-Hungarian shoe company. But now, obviously today, that's in the Czech Republic. And so Tomáš Batia was the shoe guy, and his brother Antonín and his sister Anna were, yeah, like help him run the early days. And their whole family had been cobblers for generations. In fact, Zlín was known for its shoes for generations. Okay. And at the beginning, the company employed 10 full-time employees with a fixed work schedule and regular wage, which was a rare thing at the time. So turn of the century, they might get, most people would get paid by shoe or by contract. And Tomáš Batia was just really forward thinking and say, no, we want to give people a steady job. We'll give them the same salary every month and, or every week even. And that way they'll know what they're getting and they can, you know, plan their lives better and they'll be more consistent and that kind of thing. So that was, you know, pretty revolutionary at the time to give cobblers a salary, but that's what he did. And it's kind of cool. So on the 24th of August, 1894, he founded the company with 800 Austrian gulden, in case you were wondering. And that's some $320. I don't know if that's in today's money or, yeah, how to exactly. It seems like a very little amount of money to start a company with. But he inherited that from his mother and founded a company.
And as you said, Travis, both Tomáš and Antonín were both true visionaries in every sense of the word. The heritage helped boost the popularity of this new firm very, very quickly. In 1904, Batia worked on an assembly line in the United States and brought his acquaintances with the method back to Zlín. Now, keep this in mind. He goes to America. He gets to see what this assembly line situation is all about. This works. This triggers this thing in his head saying, I can do this with shoes. I got a background in shoes. Instead of making one shoe at a time and then trying to do that, we're going to make a whole fleet of shoes. All right? So this is something, again, visionary.
Yeah, keep definitely keep the whole Henry Ford comparison in mind, because this is like, so we actually saw how this was done. And he was like, oh, instead of having one cobbler make a whole set of shoes, we'll have one guy just make the soles, and that's all he does. And the next guy just hammers it in, and the next guy, you know, just puts the lace in. And yeah, so everybody's just specialized, and also probably going insane and hates their life. But that was the new idea at the time. So Henry Ford, this is just, yeah, there's a lot of parallels here.
You know, with modern production in long distance retailing, Batya modernized the shoemaking industry. And with the company surging ahead in production, the profits went right through the roof. I mean, they were just fantastic. In the summer of 1895, Tomáš found himself facing financial difficulties and debt started to mount. To overcome these serious setbacks, Tomáš decided to sew shoes from canvas instead of leather. All right, so if you can imagine this, canvas shoes. This is before Converse shoes that were made of canvas in the 1950s.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you can imagine that. So what was old is new again, you know, another 70 years removed. But it was a kind of a neat idea for him because he lowered his overhead very quickly by doing that. This type of shoe became very popular and helped the company grow to 50 employees. Whoa. All right. But yeah, I bet, Travis, those 50 employees are working very hard. I bet you they were.
Yeah.
4 years later, Batya installed its first steam-driven machines, beginning the period of rapid modernization. Again, getting the idea also from Henry Ford. In 1904, Thomas Batya introduced mechanized production techniques that allowed the Batya Shoe Company to become one of the first mass producers of shoes in Europe. Their first mass-produced product was called the Batovki. It was a leather and a textile shoe for working people that was notable for its simplicity, style, lightweight, and affordable price. Its success helped fuel the company's growth, and by 1912, Batya was employing 600 full-time workers, plus another several hundred who worked out of their homes in neighboring villages.
Next time I see somebody wearing Converse, I'm going to be like, hey, nice Batovki, man. Those are some awesome Batovki.
They won't get that reference.
Probably not. I wonder, see, in the Czech Republic, I wonder if Batovki is still a word. You gotta ask somebody. Like, but if someone says Batovki, because Batya is clearly still known. So it's like, okay, those are Batya shoes, Batovki. I wonder if that's still a thing.
When I go to the mall tomorrow in Hodov, and I'll just, you know, Batya shoes still, you know, is there.
Oh, it's there,
I'll go inside and say, do you have any Batovkis? And like,
they'll be like, that's all we have? All right, get out of here.
Get out of here. But, you know, Travis, this is a great segue into it. We're talking about 1904, right? So we're still fresh into the 20th century and the whole idea of mechanized sort of mobility and trying to get things done on a conveyor belt and all those great things. What better way to have something ready, you know, to profit from something than one of the more horrific experiences of the 20th century, which was World War I?
Yeah, I want to say that was just the right, I mean, they got so lucky in a way. It was like a horrible event, but of course, the demand for shoes just skyrocketed. And, you know, so Batya did produce shoes for the Austro-Hungarian army in World War I. Like, that's a neat story. And of course, yeah, they just, you know, quadrupled, you know, expanded their production by an order of magnitude. They opened up factories in Prague, Liberec, Vienna, Pilsen in that time, basically. And now when the war ended, okay, so first of all, you know that Czechoslovakia became independent for the first time. And also Austria didn't do too well. And there was a slump. I mean, there was kind of obviously a huge, you know, just recession, a economic depression after World War I in Europe. And Czechoslovakia was like particularly hard hit from that because they're just a new fledgling country. But the cool story here for Batya is that, so in these hard times, it's just a neat little anecdote. They decided to cut the price of their shoes by 40%. Great. Okay. They had to, or they would have, you know, the shoes would have been too expensive. But the interesting thing is that the company's workers voluntarily agreed to take a 40% cut in wages. Now, voluntarily, I kind of want to think of those as in being like quote unquote voluntary. It's probably like you volunteer, they take a pay cut, or we all get fired kind of thing. But it's a neat story. So they all just kind of like, okay, yep, we just got out of the war. Times are tough. And in turn, so because of the economic downturn, they had to be innovative to stay alive. And so they had so the necessities were all cut in half. Batya provided food, clothing, and other necessities to the employees, because as part of the agreement to take a 40% wage cut, and it became one of the very first profit sharing initiatives you know, period in the world. This was like, okay, if you guys take this 40% cut, we will give you stocks in the company. And so then it's just as successful you are, as successful the company be, the better off we all are. And it's just, yeah, it's really interesting. But like, I have that. You have that, Pete. Like, we all have that today. It's just like everybody has that. It's a standard.
Yeah, but back then.
But back then, it was really one of the first. And the reason it's so cool is because it happened out of necessity after World War I. It was like, we're about to go bankrupt, or we all tighten our belts, including the employees, and we just say, let's keep it going. And that's what they did.
So, Travis, you and I may have talked about this at some point, or maybe it was somebody else, but there's a neat story about World War I. About some of his employees that were going to be drafted by the Austro-Hungarian Empire. Do you remember talking to me about that?
Kind of rings a bell.
It's because, you know, I tried to find some research on this online.
Oh,
but this is,
so
this
they
is
were something... exempt because they worked for Bhatia, basically.
Yes.
Bhatia had that much clout. Yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
But the clout was all because of his efforts. Now, I want you to listen to this. And I'm going to try to go by memory on this. I think another Czech told me this. And I couldn't find anything online, at least in English, to verify this story, but it's such a neat story. Okay, so he finds out that one of his, I don't know, 50 or so guys are going to be basically drafted into the army. And if that happens, his fledgling company is going down the drain, all right? It's just, it's not going to make it off the ground. So he decides that he's got to go to Vienna to talk to the Commissar, somebody that he's going to be in charge of making decisions, and saying, listen, I need these people to work for me. So he gets onto a train the last minute, and the train goes only so far. He's got to take another horse to make it to another train. He barely makes the train. He gets there before the place is closed, and he goes on in, and he says, listen, I will make a deal for you. I will crank out these amount of shoes if you let me keep these men in Zlin so that we can produce enough shoes for the Austro-Hungarian Empire. He convinces the guy to do it, but he's got to get back in time before the men are taken away by the army. So he gets back on the train from Vienna, going back to Zlin. And,
which is also, so if this is a true story, this is also a nice little insight into how bad the railway system in Austria-Hungary were and why they lost the war in the first place. Sorry,
thank you very much.
Go on.
No, that's a great aside, because their system was just pathetic.
Yeah.
And so between the horses and the trains and the connections, he barely made it back, but he did make it back in time before all the men were forced into the army. He kept the men.
So Zlin is like a 30-minute car ride from Vienna, right? These days. But yeah, it's like horse and, yeah, I could totally see that. Stagecoach and trying to make it. No, don't leave. I got an exception.
So here's this guy that is just, you know, he's of course concerned about the bottom line, but he's also concerned about these people. All right. These are people that he lives with in this town. They depend upon him for their livelihood, and he knew that. And so, I mean, here's a guy going all out to make this happen. He just gets under the wire. He keeps his factory, and then they have a boom because of the government's contract.
Then the rest is history. Yeah.
Exactly. So I love telling that story. I don't know how much of it is true, but it's a neat story nonetheless. All right. So, and so you can see that this care that Bhatia had for his employees actually really reflected on people buying his product, because they knew his investment to the community and to his employees. The consumer response to all this, was a very dramatic, and the price drop. People were just flocking to this. While most competitors were forced to close because of the crisis in demand between 1923 and 1925, Bhatia was expanding as demand for the inexpensive shoes grew rapidly. So post-World War I Europe sees that there's only a few people to reap the benefits of this modernization, and he was one of them. Bhatia's shoe company increased production and hired more workers year by year. So the city of Zlin became basically this factory town that no one really could measure up to, called Bhatiaville, which covered several hectares. It was a huge, huge sort of factory. On the site itself were grouped tanneries and brickyards and chemical factories and mechanical equipment. Anything that you need to make the product, he had on campus. It was all there. This doesn't sound like rocket science now in 21st century, even like the mid-20th century. But in the early 20th century, in the 1920s, this was a big deal.
So, yeah. So again, here's a parallel with Henry Ford. So Henry Ford, his factory was like the, eventually he built these Ford towns and everything. Now we're jumping ahead because he, you know, Henry Ford had these, he built a village in Brazil and there's similar stuff there, but it's the whole, Henry Ford tried to buy all the control, the whole vertical, production chain. So, and he was the same. So in this Batiaville, you didn't forget about shoe factory. He had a rubber plant. He had a paper pulp. He had a cardboard factory. He had a shoe shine factory, you know? So even when it's, he had a power plant. So we're not talking of shoe factory. No, he had a power plant. This is a village. This is Batiaville. Like, this is crazy. So horizontal and vertical integration. He tried to own. So, okay, what do I need? I need soles for my shoes. Okay. I need a rubber plant. I need a, you know, I need a power plant to run the rubber plant. This is not a shoe company anymore. This is a rubber producer slash shoe company slash textile slash cardboard producer for the packaging. They made their own boxes. Okay. And for and housing, shops, schools, hospitals, all that stuff.
During the interwar years, Thomas Beata began to visit the New World and observe like these great sort of things that were going on in Detroit. And if you know Detroit area, and especially the Ford aspect of things, maybe not recently because there's been a lot of problems in Detroit, but back in the day, even back in the 50s and 60s, you would see that he was getting his rubber from Akron, Ohio. He was getting his metal from some places inside Detroit and all these great areas and near Dearborn. You know, a lot of, and stuff was going on in Flint. There was a lot of things coming in that were just in the same neck of the woods. This is what Batya was doing in Zlin. And upon return to the company, Batya began to look towards this type of decentralizing operations to kind of expand upon just the campus now. That was going great. Now let's go beyond that. All right, Batya started to become a very
It's very modern. It sounds like he's describing the Amazon like campus in Seattle or something.
Well, I guess that's where they got.
It's no longer a factory. Yeah, yeah, it's like you got a whole village, and even if it's part of a town, it's just kind of crazy. Like, yeah.
Yeah, so these factories and companies were all set up in other countries that included, and get the list on here, this one, Trav, Poland, Yugoslavia, India, Netherlands, Denmark, the United Kingdom, and the United States. He was spread all out. Now,
a little company from Zlin. Imagine that.
Exactly. Yeah, these factories were made of self-sufficient and autonomous in their own design and their production, their distribution strategies, to all have the same sort of drive and focus and end game, which was towards the catering to this population that we have in Zlin. And of course, in the early 1930s, under Thomas Batya's leadership, Batya's enterprises in Czechoslovakia were the world's leading footwear exporters. Right. Yeah. So kind of a neat thing to say that that was something that Czechs did so well. I mean, it was just an amazing footprint, no pun intended, on what was done the right way for a businessman in a community.
Yeah.
So I don't know, Travis, would you basically call Thomas Batya a progressive of the time?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I'm trying to figure out, like, so Henry Ford definitely came first in many ways and is kind of copying what he saw. It seems like Henry Ford was the innovator, and then there was this new thing, and Tomasz Batya was just a very early adopter. But I might be offending a lot of Czechs by saying that. So maybe, I mean, you know, Batya definitely had some innovations of their own for sure that I would say, oh yeah, oh, clearly progressive. Even if he was just copying Ford, then, well, he did it right. He really understood what was happening and did it the right way at the right time.
And this is a neat story, really too, Trav, because he had an elevator installed in his factory in the early days in Zlin, okay? Mm-hmm. And he would sit on this elevator with a very plush chair and be able to go up and down the level so he can actually see what was going on in every floor.
So he
save time. Okay. All right. So we're talking personal investment.
Oh my God. Is that not something we would do? Like,
I know.
Sit in the elevator.
Yeah. And you didn't know when the doors were going to open. So you better be on task if you're a worker or the line manager. because Batya might be just right behind you.
It
any
sounds
second.
A little evil, actually. Like I was watching these documentaries. Oh, the New York ones with the the triangle shirt fire or whatever it's you
yeah,
know
the shirt factory where they locked the doors.
Yeah,
and
all I was kind of like, yeah. Oh, and if you just hear about the practices at the time, it's like, what were they thinking? Like no bathroom breaks, no. I mean, just like wow, it's just. Yeah, harsh, basically slavery. It's like, yeah, well, maybe he was a little bit micromanagement wasn't a known term at the time. I think everybody was a micromanager.
Well, so. if that's the worst trap, that's probably the best yeah. of best case situation because you mentioned it correctly. In 1912, 1913 was the Triangle shirt factory. You could yeah. stuff was going on there. What about the women that were testing the iridium that putting in watches
oh,
in Toronto?
Right.
Okay, they were licking
that was even later. That was even later, wasn't it? It seems like later. Yeah. Yeah, up until the 50s is crazy.
And think about all the things that were going on in West Virginia at the time. I mean, oh my gosh, you'd have these coal towns that they were doing what Batya did. But yeah. basically, they were running people. They had one store that was a company store, and they paid you in company money.
Right.
All right.
Yeah.
And so so you were always in debt to the company.
Yeah. And now I wonder about that because Henry Ford, they also had, you know, some employees were at first it's like, well, it's great because he pays twice the wages of anybody else. However, that also means that you're never going to go on strike because if he does fire you, that's it. Yeah, you'll never get that salary again, and you know it damn well, which means you're loyal just for that. So yeah, it's just, so it's kind of a double-edged sword, and you know, so he's really innovative, but in some ways, he's introducing things that we today just seem as like, well, that's backwards and evil, and that's what happens when capitalism goes wrong kind of thing. But I mean, but okay, let's look at it for the period of the time. It was just seen as, well, it's amazing. I mean, just, you know, he was able to... create 10 times more shoes than anybody else, period. You know, cheaper than anybody else. That's definitely an accomplishment.
And we talked about what his time was like in World War I and the interwar years. And we never really got to see what happened to his companies during the war years, which were, you know, must have been very difficult in Czechoslovakia when they were taken over by the Nazis. He never got a chance to see that because he actually died in a plane crash in 1932 near the Zlín airport, trying to fly to Moline in Switzerland on a business trip under the bad weather conditions. And, of course, aided by the fog and the issues, the plane crashed. And after his demise, his half-brother, Jan Antonín Batya, took over ownership of the Batya companies and eventually fled to the United States due to the Nazi occupation in 1939 and later settled in Brazil. So, you know... we're talking hard times here, I'm sure, for everybody in Zlín. The two main folks were gone. You know, Tomáš Batya died in a plane crash, and Antonín was off to the United States. Thomas's son, Thomas J. Batya, anticipated the Second World War along with 100 families from Czechoslovakia, and they moved to Canada, which is an important moment here in the story, in 1939. And they developed the Batya Shoe Company of Canada, which was centered in a town that bears this name today, which is called Bottawa, Ontario, not to be confused with Ottawa, Ontario, all right? So Bottawa, Ontario. And there's people there will still shop for Batya shoes in Canada because of this migration in 1939 to escape the Nazi occupation. Now, what's typical here is something that is called, is very important, called the Batya price, right? Focus on that for a second, the Batya price. It is used to give a price ended almost always by the number 9, basically meaning that a price, 99 cents or 1999, looks apparently much better than a rounded number such as 100 or 20, even though the difference is just one's currency unit. Now, how many times have you been listening to an infomercial where for the low price of $19.99, you can have these great knives, right?
Yeah.
That's Batya. That's a Batya price right there.
Yep.
All right?
So I'm sure 1,000 times in your life, you're just like, why isn't it just $20? I don't want that nickel, penny, whatever. If you ever wondered whose face you wanted to punch, it's Antonín Batya's.
There you go. it's what a great idea, though. I mean,
yeah.
Seriously.
Oh, psychologically? Yeah. I mean, I learned about that in psychology class in college. They're like, yeah, or even marketing class. You know, they're just like, oh yeah. And it seems like it's a penny, but it's not. People are just fooled by the 19. It looks so much lower than 20 for some reason. 19 almost looks like 10. So just having a $19.99 seems like it's half as much as $20.
Go to a fast food place. You're going to see something for 99 cents. I mean, you're going to see it. And you think, well, that's close to a dollar, but it's not a dollar.
It's not a dollar. 99 cent stores got to be better than the dollar store. Oh, yeah.
But yeah, so there you have.
That's why, if you wonder why you have a jug full of pennies. Yeah. Oh, I hate them too, guys. I hate them too. I used to like them. And before I knew this, now I just hate them.
It's so angry right now.
So angry.
So that's one innovation that I didn't talk about with commercialism and good business practice. But another one was actually the use of aviation.
Yeah. This is like, I love this because I mean, I used to work in the aviation industry for a couple of years and I sold airplane parts and avionics. And I did that in the Czech Republic, and Czech Republic is weird because Czech Republic has a huge aviation industry. Why? Because in the First Republic, in this time, just all kinds of companies were founded, and per capita, they have way more companies than even Germany or Switzerland or, you know, you name it. And this survived through communism and into the present day, where there's a lot of innovation and like little general aviation, everybody can get their, you can get your license for dirt cheap in Czech Republic. And and many people have it and fly as a hobby, like timeshare. Well, so why is it such a strong culture in Czech Republic? Well, there's many reasons, and we've talked about that before, because it's just more industrialized than the rest of Austria-Hungary and that kind of thing. But another reason was Tomasz Batia was apparently the world's first one to regularly use aircraft for expedient transport, like not just for him, but also for his like board of directors type of staff, in case like, or even in case a skilled worker needed to get somewhere really quick. So it's just he just had a couple of airplanes that they used as corporate taxis. And that was really unheard of at the time. So only statesmen and other people flew around on, you know, for their business meetings. And Tomasz Batia realized like, no, sometimes you just need to, you just need something done fast, no matter what the cost is, or you need to move this person over here. And, really strange. This actually, they were in the aviation industry a little bit too. So they actually had some, the Zlin Z-12 was kind of widely exported. And, you know, the Zine 13, the Z-13, for instance, were some successful sail planes. And some even had aero in, I mean, it's just really interesting. Like there's the Zlin factory in Moravia is a direct descendant of Jan Batia's Czech aviation sort of legacy. That's still there. And he was one of the first to do it. And now that's like common sense. I mean, now that's pretty common practice in bigger corporations everybody just flies around in the company's jets.
And Batia. Makes it somewhat ironic. That was a Batia. That he actually dies on a business trip flying. In 1932.
It was a lot more dangerous than it is today. But yeah, I mean, it's really interesting.
Yeah, very much so. But so there's so many things that you can talk about with Batia, especially from the Czech perspective, that doesn't really cross over the border so much. But you know, there's also musical review. Ostrov Dynamite in 1930, which is Dynamite Island. Was a play and was composed by Yaroslav Yezhenik. And this play satirized Thomas Batia as a villain, Thomas Bata, who, together with the Chinese servant Wu Fang, exploited the natives of a tropical island in the South Pacific. Maybe a little bit more to the idea of really what Henry Ford did.
He must have had an evil corporate reputation, right? Satirize him like this?
But maybe he was just so successful. There's a lot of people that were jealous. Who knows?
He's the capitalist in a top hat and everybody. Sure.
You know, and by the way, this came out in 1930. So already socialism was having its inroads in a lot of people. So capitalists and socialists really didn't get along for a good part of the 20th century as far as their ideologies were concerned. So maybe that has some kind of focus on that. But the plot revolves around some of the magical powers of this island's volcano, which every 50 years erupts, releasing a beneficial gas that lulls the people into a calm and sort of quiet sort of mentality. Batha was the only one that was unaffected, as he uses a gas mask hidden in the forest. All right. So again, you're kind of getting this idea that he's just very Machiavellian sort of type of situation this guy is, you know, and that he's always trying to find a scam that he's going to get over on people while other people suffer. I, you know, everything that we've uncovered, it sounds he's more of an invested owner that is caring not only for the bottom line but also for the people that work for him. If that wasn't true, then I think the city of Zling would have folded a lot earlier. So I don't know what you would pick, but you're right, Travis. This kind of makes it sound a little bit that there were either some jealous people or people that knew something about him personally that maybe is lost to history today.
But now the story of Batya does not just revolve around Tomasz Batya, who died in 32, like you mentioned. It's also his brother Antonin, and his brother Antonin Batya was a huge figure in Czechoslovakia. Period. And just to kind of, so here's one speech of him not talking about shoes at all. This is him talking about, you're not going to understand this, it's in Czech, obviously, but just so you hear his voice for a second. Here's a speech he gave about his infrastructure project. Okay?
Musel zemřít v práci, aby své dílo posvětil svojí krví.
And now, because this is a really fascinating topic, we actually, a colleague of ours, actually, my scrum master when I lived in Prague, has agreed to, he goes around and researches some of the areas where they started this massive project. And it's really impressive. Like just to kind of get a sense of how big this project really was. I got somebody on the show to talk about it. So first of all, the proposed project, and then the Nazis actually tried to do this. So when the Nazis were building their infrastructure, they started work. And then the communists used some of that proposed infrastructure to just keep right on going. I mean, it was just a really great, it was monumental. It was, you know, canals and railroads and everything. So yeah, let's jump to that. Let's jump to our expert here on the scene. And we'll give you that whole scoop, and then we'll be back with how the company just kind of exploded and its later history during communism.
Tomasz Batya had a vision how to boost the business, boost the companies. And of course, he also wanted to do something about the infrastructure in the Czechoslovakia and so on. So basically, Antonín wanted to continue in his steps, let's say. Well, actually, they had a vision that in that years, we are talking about the 30s, in the last century, there were like 50 million of people in the whole country, which was, you know, Bohemia, Slovakia, and part of the eastern Ukraine, let's say, or I don't know how is it in English. And they had a vision that this company can, live more than 40 million of people just because of the infrastructure. So, yes, one part was to build some modern roads, highways, and so on. Second was basically, you know, the plane transportation. And the third one was the water channel in southern Moravia and so on, which, you know, if they built it, then you could transport the goods from the Central Europe to harbors in eastern Germany and so on. So basically to connect our country with the Atlantic Ocean and with the world war, let's say. They were the entrepreneurs, basically first of them who made such a, how to say, great progress, or you know what. They basically created a business for thousands of employees, which was unbelievable in that age. We are talking about 100 years ago, so that's something incredible. There was World War II, okay? When I, for example, visited some of that places, like unfinished highway, D1, or Zlín, I mean the city, the headquarters of the whole business. When I was there, it, you know, the feeling was, I am not probably able to describe it in English, but I felt sad because, you know, they wanted to really create something amazing. And then Germans and all that which were happening in Europe, so they had to stop what they were doing, and all of their manufacturers or factories were taken over by the government. They were, you know, producing the goods and so on for the German soldiers, basically. And when, you know, the war ended, they thought that they would be able to continue in what they were doing before the World War II. But they couldn't do it because of, as you said, communists. So, I mean, it you know, what you described, it didn't happen in 1949 or 8, doesn't matter, but it was happening since the war started.
Wow, so, that is some serious information there to take in, and I'm glad you got your friend to do that, Travis, because that gives us a little bit more information on infrastructure. And I think that infrastructure growth is something you can also take a look at when you're looking towards beyond the borders of Czechoslovakia and the international community. All right, so a lot of these other towns and factories that were built outside of Czechoslovakia that include areas in Poland, Latvia, Romania, Switzerland, and France, and they were all to diversify into such industries such as tanning that we mentioned in the early part of the 20th century in 1915, the energy industry in 1917, agricultural in 1917. A year later, forest farming, newspaper publishing, brick manufacturing by the 1918, wood processing and rubber industry, and the construction industry, railways and air transportation that we mentioned by the 1920s, book publishing. Okay, we're moving further into the 20s. The film industry, food processing, chemical production, tire manufacturing, insurance, textile production, motor transports that would follow, sea transportation, coal mining, airplane manufacturing, synthetic fiber production, river transport. I mean, it just, the list goes on and on right before his death in 1932.
Now, the one thing you mentioned was, so first of all, Tomáš Batia was like the fourth richest person when he died in Czechoslovakia. Now, the rest of the family, they escaped before the Nazis came. And this is kind of interesting because, so in World War II, Batia actually helped, first of all, he helped remove, or like repost his Jewish employees because he could do that. So he just moved all the Jews to other branches outside of the world, which is really cool. I mean, that's just, that puts him right on there, right up there on a pedestal as a hero in my mind. And then the Germans took over. And this was in 39. So this was, you know, right, this was at the very beginning of the war, or 38, really. So they were, you know, Austria was first, then Czechoslovakia. And so Antonín Batia was in America during this time. In 1941, he emigrated to Brazil. And there's weird parallels with like Ford Town, or what was it called? Henry Ford's
city. I think it's
city.
Fordville.
Yeah, Fordville or something in the middle of the Amazon, which was just obviously doomed to failure. And everybody had malaria and dengue fever and stuff. But he moved to Brazil. They did all this stuff. But anyways, oh, after the war ended, the Czechoslovak authorities tried him as a traitor because he didn't help in the anti-Nazi resistance, which I thought was interesting. And he was in 47, he was sentenced in absentia to 15 years in prison. Now, of course, he was in Canada or Brazil and he didn't really care, but now the communists took over. A couple of interesting things here. Batia, so the first communist chancellor is Clement Gottwald, right? And Zlín gets turned into Gottwaldov, who we've mentioned on the show. Did we do a Zlín destination episode even?
We didn't do a Zlín, but we did one on Clement Gottwald as the most hated man.
Okay,
in
so then we
by
talked
Czech,
about Zlín
by
being,
the Czechs.
I was like, we talked about Zlín before, but yeah, so this is really the Batia city gets renamed Gottwaldorf, just like there's a Karl Marx Stadt and, you know, all these Stalingrad and Leningrad. So there's also Gottwaldorf gets, when the communists take over, Zlín gets a name change. And yeah, I think, I don't know, part of this might've been that they were just they didn't think he was anti-Nazi enough. So they really put their stamp on it. Now there's some complicated things here because you will hear, for instance, that Nazi occupied Czech Republic, that there was people made Batia shoes in Auschwitz. Okay. And now this is true, but this is not the Batia company that is overseas. This was the Nazis took over a couple of factories. And yes, Batia shoes were made in Auschwitz, not by Antonín Batia. So that's just totally, I almost regret even saying it because if you didn't know that, but you might've heard that rumor. And it's basically a myth because yes, that did happen, but no, it was not complicitly done by, I mean, that's ridiculous. Nazis did that, not Batia itself, even though, yeah.
This Batia shoes were made in Auschwitz. The Czech and Moravian Protectorate at the time. So they were in charge of what was going to be done.
Yeah, so there, yeah, so Bhatia in Czech Republic, yeah, he might have had an anti-slant. If you're confused about history, then you might see him as, but like we just said, he rescued all the Jews of his company. Like, he's not, I mean, it's just crazy. But anyways, okay. So, but yes, then Bhatia's shoes were made with Jewish slave labor in Auschwitz, but only technically, not by the actual Bhatia organization. Anyway, so let's skip that. Let's move on. Bhatia Vils, you kind of brought this up, but so there was, just like there was these Ford Vils in the Amazon and other places, Bhatia Vils sprang up like crazy. So even in communist places like Slovakia and Croatia, but also in like Switzerland and England and Maryland, and we have a whole long list here. One of the reasons when I first got the idea to do this episode was, I mean, Bhatia is a great story, and the infrastructure project, like you've heard, is amazing. I mean, it puts Henry Ford's plans to shame, is the thing. But what I first got interested was, so here's this communist company, basically, is what it was in my mind, and it wasn't. It was split. There was a communist version and the real Bhatia. But I was in Africa like 2 years ago, and we're driving through Kenya, and we're in sticks. Right. We're in the middle of nowhere. And there's a sign painted on a wooden fence, like really, and it was peeling. It looked like, I mean, it was just surreal. And there's these African children, like black kids, you know, cartoon kids, and they're wearing shoes, otherwise looking very tribal, but wearing nice shoes and smiling, and it says Bhatia. And I'm like, this looks like a colonial era thing, but it's not. Like, they sell Bhatia. There's Bhatia shoes in Kenya. And even in a very poor, this was a very poor place. Like, most of the people wore sandals made out of old tires, you know, rubber tires. And but even in a place like this, you can sell Bhatia shoes. Batovki are available. And you know, if you're just the very, you know, you make like 30 cents a day, you can still maybe save up for a pair of Batovki. And that's the interesting thing. They're still around. I saw that in Africa and I was like, wow, this could not be further removed from the glitzy Bhatia store that's right there on Wenceslas Square. You know, that it just, speaking of Bhatia on Wenceslas Square, that was my Czech, I've mentioned this story before, but my Czech teacher's first memory was, she was in a Bhatia store, maybe 4 or 5 years old, and Himmler was driving, and you know, the whole Nazis, the Nazi leadership were driving up and down Wenceslas Square, Himmler and Hitler in their car, just driving up and down, and my Czech teacher, who's now in her 80s, I guess, she was like jumping up and down like, oh, mommy, a parade, and her mom just grabbed her. And that's why she remembers, because her mom, she was like shocked by her mom's reaction. Her mom was like, don't be happy. Bad times are coming, you know? And she was like, what? You know? And that's why it's her first memory, standing there in a Bhatia store and her mom saying, no, those are bad people outside, Himmler and Hitler. Don't be happy, you know? Yeah, that has nothing to do with Bhatia really, except that it just happened to happen in that Bhatia store. But yeah, I mean, Bhatia is definitely, that Bhatia store on Wenceslas Square, it's seen some stuff. If that store could talk, it's seen some stuff.
Absolutely. And you know, it's everywhere. Bhatia shoes are everywhere here in Prague, of course. And you know, when you talk to a Czech about that, they're like, yeah, it's Bhatia. You know, so the background for people here is just that it's just a normal thing. You know, it's something that you grew up with. It's always been there. And of course, after the Velvet Revolution, if we can jump forward to 1989, in November of 89, Thomas J. Bhatia arrived as soon as December of 1989 and came back. Because remember, Travis, this was right. You know, if he ever stepped foot back into, or any member of the Bhatia family, back into Czechoslovakia during the communist rule, they would have been in prison, correct? Mm-hmm. So the revolution happens and he's able to come back. The Czechoslovak government offered him the opportunity to invest in the ailing government-owned Svit Shoe Company, that was renamed, of course.
Svit,
you know?
Yeah, Svit, I should say, was the communist. Yeah, really? I should have mentioned that before. Svit was the communist knockoff. So when they nationalized the Bhatia thing, so remember, the Bhatia family was left in 39, 9 years before the communists came. But when the communists took over, they took over the factories from the Nazis and just kept them nationalized and just ran it as a company named Svit or Svit. And then they even exported. Yeah. So, but then they got it back like 40 years. No. So they left in 39. So 50 years later, 49 years later, he's like, here's the keys. Welcome back. Here's your company. Might be a little bit outdated, but here you go.
Yeah. So Svit's failure to compete on the free market led to their decline. And in 2000, Svit went bankrupt. So it really was something they tried to keep going, but I think people still felt this connection that it was very too much communist background. And so they were more ready to have a Bocce shoe come back into the main lexicon, the main sort of shopping areas that they would normally see. So that brings up to the present time. So after global economic changes of the 1990s, the company closed a number of its manufacturing factories in developed countries and focused more on expanding retail businesses. Bocce moved out of Canada in several steps, one by one, and by the year 2000, it closed its Bottawa factory. In 2001, it closed its Bocce retail stores. So Bocce estimates that it serves more than 1 million customers per day, employing over 30,000 people. Operating more than 5,000 retail stores, manages 27 production facilities and retail presence in over 90 countries, mostly in Asia, Europe, and Australia. Bocce has a strong presence in countries like India. A lot of businesses do that, of course, where it has been in existence ever since 1931. Bocce India has 5 factories and 2 tanneries. All right, so really kind of a neat thing to see that it's still, in a sense, global, even though it's moved out of Canada. It still holds on to some of these places that you would see most companies do. They find cheaper labor laws in China, and they find it in Asia, and they find it in India.
It's pretty normal practice for the shoe industry as a whole, I would say. I mean, the one thing is that they kind of make their own shoes. Nike and Adidas just outsource to Chinese factories. They don't even have their own factories anymore. So it's kind of, that's different. It's interesting. That's the thing. They're different from companies that you compare them to, like Nike or Adidas. They have much more in common with Henry Ford. It's really weird. Like the way he thought, he might as well be making cars or big machinery. But no, it was shoes, and the world's better off for it. Cheap shoes, Batovsky. Pete, do you have any, you ever bought shoes in Batia?
I have. Actually, I would have to say when I first came here, my second visit to Prague as a visitor, I was here during the summer months and it was very hot. And so I said, you know what? I need some new sandals. So I bought some Bocce sandals. So
I think, one of my work shoes is from there. Cause they make like nice leather, you know, we talked about the cloth ones and they're cool, but they make nice leather shoes for work and that kind of thing. And they're always, always comfortable. By the way, I should mention at this point, we're not getting paid from Bocce here. So if you had that wondering in the back of your mind, no, we're not getting paid by Bocce. We should be. Bocce, if you end up listening to this, I'm a size, what, 10 and a half, 10, something like that?
I don't know what is probably European size. We don't know exactly. Well,
so I would appreciate some shoes. I'll happily evaluate any shoes you send me and, give them a 5-star. I mean, I give them a honest rating, 5 stars. But no, we're not being paid by Bocce here. We're just, it really is a neat story. And if you combine the story of the company with the story of Tomasz's half-brother Antonin and his infrastructure project, that snippet that Standa talked about. And again, I want to echo what we said on the Standa's segment is go take a look at Standa's website. Pete, we'll put it in the show notes. We'll link to it, and go take a look at that. And because he's just, you can see these abandoned, half-started bridges, half-started, you know, canals, railroad things, and it has this post-apocalyptic look to it. And they're just mostly forgotten. You know, this half-built bridge, and it's this huge autobahn, sometimes built by Nazis, sometimes built by communists, sometimes already built in the 30s before the Nazis came, but always abandoned. And now some are actually the modern autobahn, the modern highway system or the modern canal system. It just, you know, got, but others are just dead ends that go to nowhere, and they're still there. And it's just fascinating. So I mean, those stories combined, you can't really tell one without the other. So, but yeah, you can still go trekking around You can still go to Selene. You can still see all those things. Now, Selene has an interesting story, so you can't quite see what the original Selene. However,
if you do that, and we should do a destination episode of Selene. I'll drive.
I thought we did. Yeah. Because it is a neat story.
But it's unlike any city that's in the Czech Republic. For one thing, how the streets are designed. They're designed in a grid formation. That's not how cities are designed here in Czech Republic.
Yeah, but why is that?
Well, it's because it's easier to get around for people to get to work.
No, but what would allow them to build a whole grid is what I'm asking, because Prague is not on a grid system because
pre-planned city. They're a pre-planned city.
Yeah, so, exactly. That's the thing. Every other city is like totally. Medieval. So it's like all the roads are in circles because the city just grew. And so it's not on a grid. Like Roman planning is on a grid and American is on
not mold.
It totally is. You got the old center, which was totally decayed in communist times. And then you have the newer mold growth, which is the Panelak. The communist buildings. That's and now true. Those are the decaying. And now you see the beautiful American style American style homes with two car garages outside of that mold ring, like outside of Devitsa and in the sticks now. Oh, don't tell me it's not like mold, buddy. Prague is moldy as hell.
I think there's probably a better word than mold.
Just that slime mold. Because the only difference is that they've rejuvenated the downtown. But if you look at the street grid, it's all circles. Like it's just been slowly growing and growing.
Not to digress too much, but this is important to talk about the difference with Zlin and as a pre-formed city, a city that was pre-designed. When you look at these medieval cities that you'll see and townships in Czech Republic, one in particular, these little townships kind of fall apart. And during the late 19th century and early 20th century, there was this idea for modernization and make grander boulevards and get rid of some of these, these squatting communities. And unfortunately here, a good part of the Jewish community in Josefov, which is right by the Vltava, was basically destroyed to make, these great shopping ways. And so Travis is right in the sense that
the nicest boulevards are. Yep. Was the old Jewish quarter. That's right.
Yeah. And so you have these, really
Be the middle of the mold. That was the part that was like the oldest settled. It was near the water. Nobody wanted to live there because it was marshy. That's why it's the Jewish quarter. And now that's totally gone because that would have been the oldest part of Old Town.
But in Zlin, it was an opportunity to start with a campus and move its way around. And they made these grid formations. It was easier to transport through vehicles to get the shoes out faster.
Yep.
Yeah. It's a modern town in that sense. So that's something we could definitely talk about on a destination episode. And I think, Travis, one thing to wrap the show up tonight to get an idea, we see Batya as a really invested, innovative type of owner that was part of the community and part of a capitalist sort of construct that no one really saw the likes of in Central Europe before him. And when you try to compare him to some of these moguls of industry in the United States, like J.P. Morgan or, with Standard Oil or Carnegie or, any of these greats, Henry Ford, we talk about. There's good and bad with it. Maybe there's some good and bad, of course, with Batya to a certain extent. But I think there's so many other great stories about the man that maybe overshadow anything that might have been a negative mark on him as a man of destiny, a man of mark when it comes to business. And his name is still used today. And his, him and his brother Antonin really set a foundation that was, could not crumble under the Nazis, could not crumble under the communists. It eventually outlasted both of those.
Yeah, on the contrary, they both used their ideas and treated them like their own. Nazis and communists both. That's amazing.
Isn't that an amazing thought?
Yeah, and then when they both fell and capitalism came back, they're like, and here's your key. Here's the key that we've been keeping for you for the last 50 years. Welcome back and save it, please. It's just such a good story. Yeah.
Well, so if, no, I,
Are there Batya retail stores in the States? Like, I thought there were, but I haven't seen one personally. I'm not really a mall rat, so I don't really know what's out there.
I talked to one of our Canadian buddies at work. And
Canada, there are.
He doesn't remember there's any Batyas anymore. So I think they moved out in the early
2000s. They were. Yeah, interesting. Yeah. Okay, because I've never seen one, but I was reading this. I was like, wow, they're all over. So mostly now it's like developing countries and East Asia. But in Europe, they have very nice retail spaces, and you do see them in Germany and stuff. I mean, so it's rebranded in a really interesting way.
Childhood. Our Canadians listeners, we have a lot of Canadian listeners to the show, and if you know of some Batya shoe companies and of Canada that are still in existence, drop us a line, let us know. But Travis, as we wrap up the show tonight, we've got a lot of other great things going on with our podcasts and some of the podcasts that you're doing. Let's take a few minutes to talk about that real quickly.
Yeah, don't forget, Bohemican is a proud member of the Agora Podcast Network. And this month, the podcast of the month is 10 American Presidents by Royfield Brown, which is fantastic. It's so Royfield kind of basically finds the right guests to talk about the right president. So he has like Dan Carlin talking about Nixon. He's got Mike Duncan from Revolutions of the History of Rome on there doing an episode. It's like really, really big name history podcasters. And and then Royfield kind of puts it all together into a show. And that's obvious. It's really good. So if you just want to hear all the greats kind of talking about a specific American president or specific aspect of them, that's a great show. And I would say a great gateway history podcast in general is Roy Field's How Jamaica Conquered the World, if you've heard of that. Fantastically produced and another good show. So those are the Agora Podcasts of the Month. Otherwise, we have a lot of stuff coming out. We have new Secret Cabinet episodes coming out. We have new History of Germany stuff out. And you can find all that and more on podcastnik.com. There's Bohemian YouTube videos. And you can find all that on podcastnik.com, podcastnik.com. I did just kind of revamp the site. It's easier to navigate, I hope. But it's not all quite done yet, but all the links should be there. Go there and take a look at that. And otherwise, we've been busy.
And we'll continue to be busy. We've got a lot of neat things coming in the summer of 2016. We're working pretty hard at some other great stuff that's coming up on the Bohemian Podcast with our destination episodes, more YouTube videos coming out to see some things. Baseball in Prague. Yes, I said it. Baseball in Prague. We'll be doing some of that. Stay tuned. We really love to have your comments and make sure you rate us on iTunes if you can. Visit bohemian.com for more information on our experiences here in the Czech Republic from two American expats. So for Travis Dow, I'm Pete Coleman saying Nasledano.
You have been listening to the Bohemian Podcast with Pete Coleman and Travis Dow. Visit bohemian.com for more information on this episode, other episodes, and much more information about history, traditions, and culture in the Czech Republic. Find us on iTunes, subscribe, and review, and don't forget to rate us. We would love to hear from you. Send comments, ideas, and corrections on our comments page on bohemian.com or get in touch via Facebook or Twitter. Tune in to our sister podcast, History of Alchemy, which is also on iTunes or on historyofalchemy.com. Until next time on the Bohemian Podcast, thank you for listening.